This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Avatar The Last Airbender is over, but we are just getting started here on Tokyo Recaps. That's right, it's full spoiler recaps where we're binging a new season of a show every week and chatting about it in full spoilery detail in just one podcast. I'm Jess Sterling, and today we are discussing Netflix's live-action series, Avatar The Last Airbender. And of course, as always, I am joined here by one of the, what do they call themselves, the Avatar crew, something like that, Grace Leader. Grace, how are you?
I'm so excited. I watched both the movies. The Blue People, they're great. I think this is some of James Cameron's best work. Pandora, beautiful, stunning. So I'm excited to talk about it.
The best part is you probably spent more time watching the Avatar movies than you would have just watching the series.
Yeah, maybe. It's pretty close. Yeah, no, I watched Avatar on Netflix, the live action series. And I'm excited to talk about it. Yeah.
We have so much to discuss. Of course, if you're not subscribed, you could do so at posterrecaps.com/full spoiler recaps. If you haven't seen it, it's on Netflix. You can go watch it right now. And this is going to be a really interesting discussion, Grace, because we're coming at this from two very different perspectives. You have not seen any, besides the James Cameron Blue People, you've not seen any Avatar, the animated series.
No, I have written about several of the characters through the Posture Recaps patron Discord Brand Steel game that we run with TV characters. But no, I've never watched much of, I've never watched like a full episode of the show. I probably watched YouTube clips, but I went into this pretty unaware of the show.
Yeah, and I'm coming at it from, I've seen all of Avatar The Last Airbender animated series. I watched it originally back in 2020 when we were in lockdown. And then very recently, less than a month ago, I watched all of Korra, which is kind of the sequel series to Avatar. And I did a little bit of rewatching of the animated series in preparation for this podcast because I really wanted to make sure I understood my thoughts and that I wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like people incepting me or like my own faulty memory not being great from, you know, 3-4 years ago. So I'm really excited to talk about this because I think it is, it's a really interesting discussion to have coming at it from a person who's, you know, seen the original content versus not. And I'm very curious to hear your thoughts on the series.
Jess, I really liked it.
Okay.
A lot. I thought this was pretty good. I thought this was not perfect, but I thought for what I was going to get out of this, it's good. Here's the thing. This happens all the time with Ariel and I on Post-Show Recaps Theater. It is really hard to go see a movie without really knowing what people think about the movie nowadays. And
yeah, it's almost impossible.
It's pretty much impossible. I try really hard not to watch trailers. Pretty hard when you go to watch movies like four times. Do you know how many of the last...
You just plug your ears and go, la, 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 la.
How many of the last... Since last Thursday, how many movies do you think I've seen?
Since last Thursday?
I shall say in a movie theater.
In a movie theater. Since 5 days ago.
Yeah.
Okay. You watch a lot of... I'm going to say you've seen 3 movies in 5 days.
Nope, I've seen a movie every day, and then I did 2 yesterday. So
so many movies.
Yeah. So I see a lot of movies. I see a lot of trailers, and trailers are not the same as like public opinion. Public opinion is the one that I feel like I would much rather not know anybody's opinion of a movie before I go see it. I'm very much, this is a big DJ LaBelle Klein, aka Troy theory. He was going to come on for Top Gun Maverick. and he had not seen it. And I said, have you seen it yet? He said, no. And I said, oh, it was amazing. He said, la, 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 don't tell me. Da, blah, 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 don't even tell me it's amazing. He doesn't want any like setup for whether it's good or bad. He doesn't want to be thinking in the movie about how Grace thought this was good. Now I'm maybe not enjoying as much as I think Grace might enjoy that it was good.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, I don't mind it when something has pretty low, when people are not liking it, because all I kept thinking about while I was watching was like, I don't think this is as bad as everyone's saying it is. But I don't have any context for why people would think this could have been better. So I shall say that. But I thought it was very good.
Yeah. Gosh. So I will say I struggled with like my TikTok algorithm all of the sudden was all Avatar all day, baby. Like it was really hard to avoid public opinion on this. I binged it fairly quickly. You know, me and my husband watched it over the past few days. And I also will say because I watched it with him, he is a big Avatar fan. Like he recently rewatched the entire series. He's seen it a few times. He's pretty, and he has a much better memory than I do. So he knows like when we're watching, whether or not how faithful the adaptation is, you know? So I did rely on him quite a bit to remind me of certain things, of how certain things may have happened in the animated series versus the live action series. What I will say is, I think when I started the series, I was like fairly underwhelmed overall. By the end of the series, I was like a little annoyed. And it's interesting because I think that there are certainly pros and cons, and I'm not here to like completely bash the series because I think there's a lot to love. But I also think they made some decisions that were like pretty questionable. So yeah. And so with that being said, Grace, before we get into like the quick plot recap, after watching the live action series, would you be interested in going back and watching the animated series? I'm just
curious. Yes, because I think the strongest thing about the show is the world building and the basis for pretty much everybody's story, I think, is like the strongest piece in terms of a setup of like what this is. And then knowing that most people think like, either that this, I feel like the reactions I've seen are like, I wouldn't have made those choices, but overall, I kind of understand that they have to condense some stuff. And then to the like fully like outright, like, no, I think this is like bad writing. And we know that the creators of the animated series like left the production of the show.
Yeah. Which was another thing that I knew going in. And I do think colors your opinion of something, because it's like if the creators left because of like creative differences, okay, that's not great because you like the source material so much, you know? So I think that also kind of is a little tricky to get around when you're trying to consume something with blindfold on, because you got to see the show. But, you know, with blinders, like the horses.
Yeah, I you know, this has like, you know, audience scores, you know, Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb scores aren't everything, but this does have like a 75% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes, which I do think is like maybe a bit lower than I would give it. So I think that if you think about that, a lot of people are like very protective over this thing and thinking that it's like, you know, and it's totally fair for people to think that this is like really bad. That's totally fair. I don't think it was very, very bad. So I would rate it like probably a smidge, like maybe an 8 out of 10 for me. This is what this show, I think. But yeah, it definitely does make me want to watch more. But I said this about One Piece and then I didn't go watch more One Piece. So we shall see.
Oh, and also for those worried, if like you are interested in watching the animated series, I'm not going to spoil anything from the animated series. I am going to make like some comparisons because I think a lot of people listen to this podcast probably will have seen the animated series. So at the very least, I'll be making, you know, some comparisons to season one of the animated series, which is basically what this is trying to cover is all of season one.
And there is a full rewatch podcast of Avatar Los Angeles called Aang in there that was on Post Show Recaps, one of the very first of like kind of like I think just before the Discord Patreon launched, I think about that same time. So it's there waiting for you. Zach and Jacob do that if you want more coverage of the live action. I know that Chappelle was joined by Isaiah 8-Ball from Silent Podcasts over on Nothing But Netflix this week, so there's that. But we'll chat about it here.
All right, Grace, do you have a little bit of a quick plot recap?
I feel like I'm not probably the person to do this, but, We meet Aang at the beginning of the show. He is an airbender. He's extremely powerful. We learn this, and then we learn sort of that he doesn't know this, but he is the next Avatar. A singular person who can control the four elements, can bend the four elements, and basically when one dies, they are spiritually replaced by another one. So Aang is the newest Avatar. Just as the Fire Nation is about to attack, they sort of launch this faux attack that they're going to attack the Earthbenders, I believe, and then are secretly going to go actually attack waterbenders. They're going to go attack the Airbenders because they know that's where the Avatar is. Doesn't matter.
They attack the Airbenders, basically killing all of them off except for Aang, because he's not there.
He's frozen in ice for 100 years. He's going to be woken up and meets Katara and Sokka, Katara being a waterbender. They're basically going to go on this journey of the Fire Nation is at war with all the other nations. They're going to be chased specifically by Prince Zuko, whose mm-hmm. sole mission is to find the Avatar and bring him home. He's mentored by Uncle Iroh. We are going to learn the backstory of Prince Zuko, being that's like his father, Fire Lord Ozai, like basically doesn't really believe in his power or in his ability to.
He exiles him. Yeah.
He exiles him until he can come back. I thought that was fascinating. There's also this General Zhao, who's also tracking Aang, and we go on this like romp throughout different areas of the different nations until mm-hmm. ultimately culminating in sort of a battle between the Fire Nation and all their ships, where they're going to try and destroy the ability for basically any waterbender to have powers by removing the moon from the spirit world. Aang goes into this sort of I'm not the person for the state
yeah, avatar
of being,
mode is
avatar easy. Mode
yeah the avatar to, state
to basically to fight them off. Katara's dealing with some personal, some misogyny from the Northern water tribe that ultimately she is able to convince them to be able to use women who can waterbend in the battle to fend them off. And yeah, anything else I missed? They fight off the Fire Nation. But we also get this threat of Azula,
Princess Azula.
Yeah, Zuko's sister, who seems to be sort of like maybe has the power to lead the Fire Nation, and had been mentoring or giving intel to Zhao. Zhao's killed by Zuko and kind of Iroh. I think Iroh, but
Iroh kills him, which is different than the anime series.
No, what I missed? I missed really important stuff. What I missed?
No, I think that pretty much sums it up. Katara is a waterbender. I think you mentioned that Sokka doesn't have any bending abilities, which is interesting because he's a part of Team Avatar. It's all about season one of this show and the animated show is basically the building of Team Avatar, and it is every season of Avatar is focused on a specific type of bending. So season one is water bending. And that's kind of mirroring the animated show in that way. Let's get into it. And I think I kind of want to start with the cast, because I think this is again a huge step up from the movie, where they did a poor job of representation. Almost everybody was white. And very obviously this should be a diverse cast when we're talking about the water tribes are based on indigenous people and their tribes, and it's just you want to see the representation. So it was nice to have that on this live action series. I think we also were getting so many new names and faces, like pretty much all the younger people are unknowns.
This was not a problem for me because I was so initiated with basically almost everybody of note has been cast in the Brand Steel in the PSO Discord. So it really was not a problem for me to be like, oh, that's Azula, that's Sokka, that's Katara, that's Momo. It's like I knew everybody. There's some people I had been not introduced to, but most people, I knew.
Yeah. I think the casting was okay. I feel like if I'm gonna do like pros, cons, and then like a meh list in the middle, I felt like the acting, particularly from the children, was like pretty meh overall. And I'm not saying like they can't improve, like this is just season one and I know they're planning on doing more seasons. I felt like probably the best casting of the kids overall was Sokka. I felt like he fit the bill of Sokka's character the most. And even then, I think Sokka, we should talk about the sexism thing, Grace, because this is a big, I've seen a lot of people online complaining. In the animated show, Sokka is a very sexist character. This is something that is from the very beginning. He underestimates Katara. He underestimates every woman he meets. And we know, because as you could see in this live action series, he meets a lot of powerful women. Mm-hmm. You know, he meets Suki. He meets the moon goddess. Like, there's a lot of powerful women that he's around, and he constantly is underestimating them. And that is a big part of his overall character journey and character arc. And it is completely removed from the live action series. Do you have any thoughts on that? Obviously, coming from it from a different perspective of not having seen the original Sokka.
Okay, so not really. You know, there obviously, I was then surprised that like there is a full story about sexism in the show. So I was like, okay. But the idea that it doesn't come from Sokka, the piece that I think. Is I can see how it is annoying for it to be removed. And this is almost seems counterintuitive to, like, you know, the idea of wokeness, that we would be like, we put the sexism back in the show, you know, like it feels backwards. But, you know, I am a big believer, you know, from, you know, the first podcast I hosted was called Hold Up, but we would look at media and see if it held up. And the piece is like, for us with like queer representation, was who is being like laughed at, or are we laughing with or at you? And if we're laughing like with the homophobic character, it does not hold up. If we're laughing at the homophobic character, it does. The best example of this, I know this is going to be a wild leap to make, but The Simpsons, there's an episode of a very famous episode of The Simpsons where Homer has a friend who is played by John Waters, who ends up being gay, but he finds out after he's like loves him, like as a friend, like he's like, this guy's great. And then if it turns out he's gay, and he's like, oh no, like, no, like he can't be gay. He's going to turn Bart gay. And the whole episode, like Homer is so clearly in the wrong. And by the end of the episode, he obviously learns, you know, his character development. He's like, you know, okay, you can hang out with us, blah, blah, blah. I imagine the same is to be said about Sokka's character in Avatar, that a character can have sexist beliefs that then they learn and that they're proven wrong in those sexist beliefs. What doesn't work, obviously, in media is when it's just like sexism. That's funny. Like,
it doesn't exist.
That, right? Yeah. Or like, isn't that so funny and true that, like, you know, whatever stereotype you want to make about women. But the idea is that he grows and learns from it. So the idea that like we need to remove problematic traits from people from all media to make it woke is just wrong. And actually is an ineffective learning tool. I think actually, I guess it's an ineffective, but I do think like an effective learning tool can be to have a character like Sokka who shows that he has sexist beliefs because of whatever reason he has them, and then is proven wrong and ultimately changes his mind. And isn't that we want from society and humanity, is for people to realize that they're wrong about their beliefs, that they have that are untrue. Yeah,
I tend to agree with that. I mean, at first I wasn't, I will say, like in the very beginning, the first few episodes, I wasn't super bothered by the fact that they had removed that aspect of his personality. However, or like his beliefs, I should say. However, like it really undermines his overall journey, because it's through meeting all these very powerful, strong women that he like learns how wrong he is. And you're right. On the animated series, it is very much treated as Sokka is an idiot. Like he's being stupid. And it's so he gets embarrassed 100 times when he, you know, there's a scene where he's like challenging Suki to, you know, to fight him. And she is like this Kyoshi warrior, and he like has the audacity to be like, I can defeat you, and she hands it to him, she shows him. And so having that part removed, it also, in my opinion, hindered Katara as a character, because I'm very interested to hear how you perceived Katara in this series, because she is, in my opinion, very different than the animated series version of Katara.
I liked her. I don't know that she is has the most interesting stuff going. Actually, you know what? That's not true. I actually think there's parts we'll get to about my favorite scenes, and her backstory is one of my favorite things in the show.
With her mother and everything.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's brutal. So I loved that. I really do. I really like the story all season long about Aang learning that he has to do it himself. And this is a thing that I think is like so good. And again, I bet, you know, to everybody listening, probably what anybody who's watched the animated series, what I bet you're going to say the whole time is, as I say something that I liked, they'll be like, but it's so much better in the animated show. I could just feel that. That's
oh, of course. It's certainly.
So I love the idea that the Avatar is this thing that has existed through many iterations, and that Aang is trying to feel like these are the people who are the most, the greatest teachers, who could be better than the people who were Avatars before. And they keep saying things like, you have to do it alone. But even these different Avatars have been like, oh, but you know, that's how she did it. But I, you know, that's not how, mm-hmm. that's not how I did it. And so this idea that then Katara mostly, but also Sokka, are like then being like, no, like, just because they fought, did everything alone, doesn't mean you have to do everything alone.
Yeah.
But that balance between him being someone who was like so powerful, when Aang says, training for me wasn't about getting stronger, it was about controlling my ability. Like, mm-hmm. that's all stuff I really love. And nothing is better for me than, like, I really do love stories that are like, live together, die alone, like that theme. Mm-hmm. So it's like obviously gonna resonate with me. But so, and Katara's like a big piece of that. Even the, you know, the story that does involve sexism in the show, which is that the Northern Water Tribe doesn't let mm-hmm. women use their powers, and she's like, oh, but like, look, like, you know, just let us help. And then she does, and then these like people come up to her and are like, they said that actually we should listen to you, we should follow you. Like, I did like it a lot. So yeah. But I don't know what I'm missing, Jess. So.
Yeah, so Katara in the animated series is much more of a leader, I think, than she's portrayed on this show. And in a way where I think because they removed the Sokka sexism part, right. they also kind of removed Katara being a bit matronly, which right. she very much is. She is, in my opinion, the leader of the three of them at the very beginning. And on top of that, her and Aang's relationship, like their, you know, their friendship, their connection, to me was like very much missing from this series versus the animated series. So much of season one sets up their bond and them learning waterbending together. And so, and like she teaches him and he teaches her. In my opinion, it's very much like they're a little competitive. And so it kind of, they fuel each other in that way to be better and be stronger and be better at waterbending. And I think a lot of Katara's storyline felt like pretty bland to me. Like it didn't feel like the Katara that I know, which is like, she's so strong. She's so assertive. She stands up for what she believes in. And she's also very much a leader of this trio. And I felt like they gave a lot of Katara's agency away in the series and didn't have her as that like very strong force that I was hoping to see. A lot of the storyline is the same, you know, everything with her mother and all of that. And that I will agree. I think they did a good job with that, like the emotion and everything. The acting again, it, for me, is a little iffy. Like I wasn't always fully there with the kid acting. You know, I think it's hard. They're young and you want to be able to feel what they're feeling and like have them sit in those emotions. But yeah, I just felt like that was a little missing from Katara's storyline. I just felt like of the three of the trio, Aang, Katara, and Sokka, to me, I felt like Katara was the furthest from the character that I know and love from the animated mm-hmm. series. But let's talk a little bit about...
Can I just say, and it's not to be like, yeah, you know, but like, I feel like basically everything other than her being a leader of the trio, because I would agree that she's not really, I would not portray her as the leader of the trio. It does kind of, I feel like it's much more like they all have moments at different times of being the one to be.
And that's right, certainly true something. In the animated series too. Like they all have their moments.
So, but I guess the other thing I feel like the stuff you're saying about like where they're learning from each other, it's certainly not as like competitive in nature, but I feel like that's in there, like of them.
Well, the main thing I'm thinking is like there is a scene where Aang and Katara are down by a stream, right? And he's trying to help her with her bending.
Yes.
One of my biggest gripes, I think, with the season being that it is season one, it is supposed to be the waterbending season. Aang did not waterbend a single time. Mm. And that is wild. Like, as someone who watched the animated series, it is insane to me that he did not waterbend at all. Because in the animated series, he waterbends. In fact, he's better than Katara and it pisses her off. Mm. And that fuels them to then like improve with each other. And then when they get to the Northern Water Tribe, they're trained. They're actually trained, which does not happen on this series. And that is how Katara becomes a master. She exceeds Aang's like prowess in waterbending. And so there's always this like a little bit of a back and forth all season with them of who's gonna excel more at waterbending. And I just felt like with having Aang not waterbend at all, I was like very thrown off at like, what the heck? Like he remember the entire purpose of him, of the Avatar, is to learn all of the elements and to be able to keep the world, you know, diplomatic and at peace. He didn't learn waterbending this season. He didn't learn it at all. And I was so upset because it's like, that's a huge component of being the Avatar. And that was the whole purpose in going to the Northern Water Tribe, you know, is so he could learn waterbending. And to not have it was just wild. Like it was a choice, you know?
Can one thing I want to say about the I actually really didn't mind the acting at all. And I think part of it, and I'm gonna use a comment that I think Will made in the Discord, which is that the animated show had these moments that show us like there's a little bit of like, oh, they're still kids. And
that is my biggest gripe with the series. Absolutely, yes.
Okay, when I saw that, the first thing I thought was like, oh, the way to know that they're kids is that they're all kids. No, that sounds really silly.
That's the thing though, is it's different when you see the animated series. There's so many lighthearted moments, and Aang is such a kid, man, which is why Katara feels like more the leader to me. Aang is 11 years old, 12 years old. He is like a kid, and he jokes and he plays and he doesn't take stuff seriously all the time. And I felt like this Aang was so serious.
Oh, I don't think that at all. I thought they were all like, Sokka is definitely the one who has the most, like, he has the jokey, quippy line at the end of the scene. Yeah. But I thought all of them for the most part, like, and I think it's just that they're literal children. It's really hard
like kids, yeah,
to not make it. What, even Aang's voice, like he sounds so young. I didn't, you know, there's like the moments where like when he goes to meet his former master, like his original master,
Kyoshi, I think
Gyatso, right?
Gyatso. I'm so sorry. Yes, no, Kyoshi is the other avatar. Gyatso. I'm not so great with the names.
No, that's fine. Like I feel like he feels very childish in that moment, and like there is a seriousness, but it's like we'll have more time. Like it's such a childlike innocence to not understand that, like, oh no, you're not going to be able to come back here, dude. Like this guy's got like I felt like, and I. And then the show like surprised me like with how dark it can be. So I think in episode one, they're literally burning bodies. And I'm like, whoa. But
that again, that is very different than the animated series, because the animated series is a kid's show. Yeah. And this is why I was very concerned. And again, really hard to go into something with, completely blind. But I had heard that the creators were like, oh, yeah, we want a Game of Thronesify the show. And I'm like, I'm very nervous because that's not what the show is. And it did feel very dark at times. And I was a little, you know, maybe that's what they intended. Like maybe that was like what they wanted the result to be. But it just felt like there could have been more moments that were fun, because there are so many laugh out loud moments in the animated series that I felt like it was just kind of missing. Like everything is so dark and everything is so tragic. And yeah, in the animated series, Aang is like, he feels the weight of the world on his shoulders quite a bit because he's the Avatar. But he also has these like very fun, lighthearted moments that I think it was, you know, everything felt very dark and dour in this version.
I will say that is not my interpretation of the show. Yeah. Everything was dark. My interpretation is that like they oftentimes were like three kids trying to figure it out. And I come in with no context of the show to know what's different, but I did not feel like I was surprised by, like, I feel like when it was dark, I was like, oh my gosh. But I love dark content. So it was like dark, for me, I want to give the show some credit in terms of like, I actually thought that like there's a way in which like if Sokka doesn't land his line, his little quippy line of like, you know, where he, I can't think of an actual joke that he made, but he's like, but he, you know, he'd be like, actually, can we have three apples, you know, or like whatever thing he would say, like it so easily couldn't have worked, you know? And I did think it like did work in the way to make it feel like I thought it worked. So I thought the balance of the tone for me was something that did work.
Yeah. Something I do think like the casting department did a pretty good job with was I thought Dallas Liu as Prince Zuko was pretty good casting. Like, it's really hard. Zuko is an incredible villain. He is like notorious. Like he's a really excellent character, especially with Iroh. Iroh is so beloved, so beloved. It's so hard to nail the casting. I think they did a pretty good job between Zuko and Iroh. I thought their relationship was pretty good. Zuko, I think, lacked a little bit. I wanted to see a little bit more of a temper sometimes because he's very intense in the animated series. Mm-hmm. But overall, I was pretty pleased with the Zuko and Iroh stuff. Iroh is hard to like cast him because the guy who voiced Iroh, it just, you hear his voice. Like, you know what I mean? Right. It's hard. But I thought they did a really good job. I thought that the relationship between them, it felt like it captured the essence of the animated series.
So the Zuko stuff is probably my favorite stuff in the whole show because I know a little bit about him. But even though I was like, oh, the eye thing. So interesting. So that's probably my favorite backstory stuff. And we'll get to it when we talk about favorite scenes. But I think that's some of the best stuff. And this is where I feel like the foundation for obviously what the show is. Like, this is stuff they're pulling from the animated show. This is what makes me want to watch the animated show because the foundation is so strong. I do really like, I loved Iroh a lot. I think, again, I don't know what I'm missing, but I think like, I really, really liked that the tension between Aang and Zuko. And there's one specific moment where Aang keeps being like, you know, clearly this guy, like he can see that Zuko is hurting in a way that like nobody else is like at least like wanting to recognize. And there's a scene where I think it's after Zuko goes to take him out, like, and then like kidnaps him or whatever. And then things get turned around where he gets shot in the head. And so then he's helping him and he puts him in the boat and he wakes him up and he's like something along the lines, like, you know, you don't have to do this all alone. And Zuko like tries to shoot fire at Aang and Aang blocks it. Mm-hmm. And then Zuko like goes out into the boat, into the water. And I was like, oh, that's so good. Because like, you think this would be the moment where Zuko should be like, ah, you're right, I should change. And it's like, he doesn't. I thought it was so good. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause that's not realistic. Like, right. For people's growth. And I totally agree.
Not for
a
17-year-old boy too. It's so good. Yeah. It's like,
totally agree.
He's stubborn. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. A character that I think, really expanded upon in this season, that wasn't really explored a whole heck of a lot in season one of the animated series is Azula. Azula Grace is probably my favorite character in the entire series.
Interesting.
Not this version of Azula. the thing is she really isn't shown much. We really only get a glimpse of her in season one. She's explored much more later. But she is, if you think Zuko is a villain, my gosh. Azula brings it to another level. And for me, I did not get that vibe from her on the show. She is horrifying. Like, she is, you are shaking in your boots around Azula because she is just cutthroat. She doesn't care. And I just, you know, the tension between her and her father is very different than it is on the show and the animated series. I didn't mind it as much. Like, you know, they can have some conflict. That's fine. But yeah, I wanted more from her. I wanted like intensity in a way I just didn't get, knowing that she is as like intense as she is on the animated series. I just wasn't getting that vibe from her on the show.
Don't spoil it because I don't know if it's a spoiler, but does Ozai only have two kids?
I believe so.
That's
to
too
my
bad.
Memory.
He should have one other kid and then one that is from a previous marriage, then we could fully do Fire Nation Succession. That's what it reminds me of. Like,
that would be incredible.
Yeah, so Azula's Shiv, Zuko's Kendall. Right?
Make it happen, because that would be, I would watch it. I would
We just need like a Roman and we need a Connor to be in there somewhere. Azula, I feel really bad critiquing children actors, so I don't, but I wish she was maybe more like intense, a little, but you know, whatever.
I will say like the costuming and all of that, you know, to give some props to a lot of the characters.
Show. Yeah.
The beautiful, gorgeous, like costumes. I have one gripe, which we'll get to. Costumes, incredible. The bending itself was awesome. Yeah, like firebending, the ice, everything, right? All of that stuff was so cool. Some of the CGI stuff is a little iffy here and there, but I could forgive that. The final battle, gorgeous, Grace. Like, absolutely incredible watching, like, the ship smash into ice and stuff.
Yeah.
10 out of 10. I love those moments.
I know Stuart had some gripes with, I think, the green screening of the show. Gotta be honest, I'm so glad I barely noticed this stuff, because it feels great to just watch the show and not be like, oh, shoot. It's because it's like an I Spy. When you see it. Now you can't unsee it.
Yeah. So I did see it.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I was just watching along.
Unfortunate. You
know?
Yeah.
So I actually did read your comment about the costuming thing, and then I could not unsee that. So thanks a lot, Jess.
I'm so sorry. Yeah, the one that I was like, very like, what are we doing here? UA looked like she had a Party City wig on. Like, what are we doing? Like, you have Netflix money, people. Get her a lace front wig. What are you doing? You know, talk to some Drag Race people. I was pissed. That was some polyester hair. That was terrible.
Yeah, I didn't notice it. And then you said it and I noticed it. And I was like, oh, this is pretty bad. But they really didn't notice it before then. So
yeah,
be careful, everybody. Be careful on your wig watch. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Watch out for those wigs. But yeah, that's pretty much the cast. I mean, like, again, shouts to, like, I thought Sebastian Amoruso as Jet was really pretty accurate to the Jet I remember on the show. Suki, like, 10 out of 10. Love Suki. She is incredible. She's the Kyoshi warrior with the makeup, and damn, that makeup wipe worked real quick when she wiped that crap off.
Yeah, what the heck? Wait, but Yui, what, Sokka, what are you doing? Didn't he have a thing with?
Oh, Sokka just falls in love constantly. It's fine.
We should probably maybe at this point talk a little bit. I've mentioned him now again. So there was a casting controversy that happened 2 years ago when he was cast in the show. I haven't seen much about it when I was Googling.
I tried to look it up and see, but it doesn't look like anyone ever like validated those rumors. It was a question of whether or not the actor who plays Sokka, Ian Ousley, I think, is actually indigenous.
So this is a thing. There was a thing with Elizabeth Warren. You might have seen a politician in the United States, a senator, about fictitious claims of being indigenous. And this happens. There's a lot of this is actually in Canada. It's happened at universities a lot, where people get found out that they are not indigenous, but they have received, they teach courses on indigenous history or gotten their tenure because they were indigenous. So the complicated history of this is that, and unsurprisingly, you'll find out that it has to do essentially with racism.
Shocker.
Yes. So the sort of way that this happened. So with Ian Ousley, the thing that sort of happened was he has sort of a claim from a tribe, a Cherokee tribe, but that tribe like affiliation is sort of an undocumented, it's not federally recognized.
Right.
It does seem like there's some evidence that like people who have used it in the past have used it to create fictitious indigenous claims, to claim that they're Cherokee. There's only 3 Cherokee nations that you can get affiliation from that is federally recognized in the United States. So that doesn't mean that his is fictitious, but it does mean that the claim he has from the tribe that he is claiming to have Cherokee ancestry from is one that has dubious claims. That does not mean that he is not Cherokee.
Right.
Okay. Secondary, there is this thing of like, well, why do you have to be federally recognized to be indigenous? And that goes through, you know, in Canada, again, I'm Canadian, so I'm going to speak to Canadian history. That's because there was a thing called the Indian Act, which is a racist name, that basically legislates like treaties, and also then you have to be able to access benefits in not in a fully sort of like reciprocal way of like we mistreated you, but to a degree there's an element of that, like you might not pay as much for tuition, or you know all of these things that you would have had to have some way to prove that you have that ancestry. So then tribes get recognized to give their citizens. And in Canada, this is called like Indian status. Again, an outdated term that we don't use anymore, but this is the official name of the legislation. And you have to have that. And there are ways in which people who are Indigenous either can't or can't, you know, if you were never able to have proof that you were, you can never claim it. This is obviously harder for people who don't maybe have, who might not look Indigenous either. And so there's so many complicated layers. I have a very good friend of mine who his dad is Indigenous, but my friend, he's white passing and nobody would ever assume he's Indigenous. And he actually chooses not to claim Indian status because he doesn't believe his personal belief is he does not need the things that that the Indian Act was designed to provide for people. So he doesn't feel like he's at a disadvantage when he was like applying for school or things like there's reasons why he did not feel like he needed to apply for it. So all of this to say is it's very layered and very complicated. It's also, you know, the United States government, the Canadian government having jurisdiction over who can then claim ancestry of their own tribes. Then the secondary issue of this is not just that like institutionalized, governmentalized racism. Then there's also this that people can exploit these systems. So why this happens in universities a lot is because finding a job where you would be an Indigenous person who could teach an Indigenous history or whatever you're teaching is there's not as many of those jobs. And then if you can get it, and maybe you look like you're Indigenous, but you're not Indigenous, you can get away for a long time because there's so many, like it might be easy to fabricate the documents or like just say, or sign up for something here and then say you are, you can get away with it. So I think the assumptions about Ian Ousley, the immediate assumption is like, he is taking away jobs from real Indigenous people by doing this, but there's also the very complicated nature that he might actually be Indigenous and because of the way that this system was created.
Right.
So it's extremely complicated and we cannot sigh on this podcast whether or not he is Indigenous.
Right. But there's no proof either way. And so it is what it is. It was something that was a bit controversial at the time, but like largely looking at the cast, like it's the diversity in the cast is like absolutely outstanding and incredible. And
also, if I said anything that was wrong in that statement, those are my understandings. I am a white person who does not have to deal with these. I'm sure I studied some Indigenous history, but that does not make me an expert, nor should I say that I'm an expert. If any of that is wrong, please let me know. I'll try to clarify it in some manner. I'll retweet you, et cetera, to clarify anything that I said. That is my best interpretation of what I understand after doing. I've studied some of this and did some research before the podcast today. But again, if I am wrong, please let me know. And I'm mostly saying that though to people who are Indigenous or understand that the complications of this from that perspective, more than so that I'm looking for white people to tell me that Ian Ousley is actually not Indigenous and he's a big fat phony.
So. Yeah. But yeah, just to shout out some of the other, like some of the great casting, because I thought by and large, most of the adults I thought were really great. Like Daniel Day Kim was it like 10 out of 10, so good.
I said we love some Lost. We visited Ken Long in there as Commander Zhao. I quite liked him.
I thought he was pretty good. And especially when we got the scene between him and Francois Chow? Is that his name? It was the father and son from Lost just hanging out together.
Yeah. Right.
I thought that was really fun. And so, yeah, like
Danny Pudi is the mechanist. Very fun. Danny Pudi, community.
He was good. Yep. Yeah. I thought the adults were really, really good overall. And I really didn't have many gripes. Iroh, I thought was pretty good casting as well.
We love Paul Sun Yun-Li. It was great.
Yeah. So good. Overall, I thought the casting was pretty good. Like I said, if I had like my positives from the show would certainly be the bending looked incredible. The fight scenes were really fun. The adult casting was really good. The child casting was okay. Like I felt like decent about it. Mm-hmm. I felt like the writing was like kind of clunky, especially because, and that's why I can't blame the actors all the way, because when they're not given like great writing, I think that's like tough to act through that. But like the writing on the show is so good and crisp and like, oh, and then I felt like some of it just didn't translate super well. And again, so biased coming into it, having watched the animated series, where you probably, you may not have had that reaction.
Do you know, it's funny, the writing, I know, like, it's not the best writing I've ever seen, but I actually, you know, it's kind of the idea that it's a kid's show that I actually was like, and do you know what? Some of the best writing ever has been done on children's shows. So that's not to be like, you can have worse writing on kids shows. Like, it's not true, but I kind of like, that's why I was giving it maybe more of a pass. Very funny, as someone who has not watched the shares, I was still very excited to see Cabbage Merchant, who I know a lot about. Again,
I was going to say that was, to me, the biggest, what is it called? Like, fan service thing they did was like, you just wanted him to say cabbages and he kept getting interrupted and we're on the edges of our seats like, say cabbages!
Very good. George Takei as Ko, the face healer, was very fun in there.
Yeah, so, would have been better if they did it properly, but that's okay.
Wow, you could just probably sum up the whole podcast in that of being like, yeah, it was good, but it would have been way better if they did it like the show. That's the podcast.
Listen,
that's
the podcast. Here's the thing, because I don't want to be like that person who just craps all over it, but it's, in my opinion, like, I'm okay with them condensing stories, like, you know, shifting things around. They did a lot of that because they have 8 episodes that were like, give or take an hour, and they're condensing like 20 something episodes that are 20 something minutes, but still 20 episodes, you know. That's a lot to condense. So they did smush some plot lines together. They moved some things around at different locations. That was all fine by me. Like, if you're going to do it in a way where the beats still hit just as hard. And I feel like we sacrificed a little bit of like character development and like camaraderie and that kind of, and like, you know, the more emotional beats to kind of shove a lot in. And that's where I think they kind of lost me a little bit, you know, because like I said, it was a beautiful show, like visually. Beautiful show. I just think that, like, you know, they missed me with a little some of the choices they
made. Okay, let me ask a question that is maybe too big of a question to ask at 45 minutes, but I'm actually maybe interested this as much to briefly talk about it here as I am for people to respond to us in whatever way possible. So either through Twitter or on the Discord if you're a patron. Other than making money, okay, that's a big piece of this.
Yeah.
What's the point of live action adaptation?
I've been asking myself that since I watched it. And I truly, like, the only thing I can think of, again, beyond the money, which is obviously the reason, I think, like, seeing the bending, like, obviously it's not real CGI, but seeing it in a live action setting was really cool. Like, to me, that's probably why, right? Getting to see Aang, like, flip in the air and getting to see Katara, like, fight with ice and, like, all of that is so cool. And to see it done, like, in a live-action way where it looks real, I mean, that's one reason. The other reason is, again, if they wanted to make a darker show, a more adult version of this same show, I guess a live-action is the way to do it. But to me, that's not enough of a reason to do it, but...
I was thinking about this on my walk this morning. I was just walking my dog. Can I tell you, I think I have an answer that will not be fun for anybody who loves the animated versions of these shows.
Oh, no.
Which is that the purpose of these is to have people watch who will never otherwise watch the animated version of these
things. 1,000%. Yeah.
And so from that perspective, it's still fair for people who really love the animated thing to be like, oh, but you're not even, you're a cat, you know, you want it, still want it to be good so people watch it. And there is a small portion of these people who, maybe someone like me, who would say like, oh, maybe I'll watch the animated version now. But the other piece is like, I was wondering this morning whether or not it matters to, say, Netflix executives, whether people who watch the show, the animated show, whether they care about whether those people like it or not. The reason you want those people to like it is because then the show gets good ratings and reviews, and there's popularity and people are watching it. There's an argument that at the end of the day, that stuff matters. If there's a baseline for how good it will be, so obviously you can't have it be like Madam Web was like atrocious, but then obviously that was bad, and then people are talking about it, and just
right,
people
they talk about how bad it is. Yeah,
just people talking about it though translate into like people going to see it or not
all
going
press
to see
is
it.
Good press.
I don't know, but here's my thing: the people who like the animated series, and there will be people out there who will be like, "No, on principle, I'm never watching it." But how many people watched Avatar this weekend because they watch the animated series? So in essence, in terms of like the most dollar value that they can attribute to making Avatar The Last Airbender the live action show is to say that people watched it. Mm-hmm. And if everybody who watched the animated version, not everybody again, but I'm like, if you're not watching it a principal, I actually think you're like an extreme rarity. Or if you watch one episode, you're like, I'm not watching anymore. I also think you're rare. Like, I'm guilty of this. I will go and like watch the thing, even though I'm like, but I love the original thing and now you're ruining the thing, but I'm watching it.
I'm watching it anyway.
So if all of the people who love Avatar go and watch it, you have a huge number of people who just watched your thing. And then if the actual primary goal is to get the people who don't watch it, now that's only like on top. So I feel really bad saying this because I'm not trying to say if you watch the animated version, your opinion doesn't matter. And ultimately it sucks because the whole thing is about making money. So it's actually like, you know, the fact that the creators of the show opted out shows that it's not as much of a creative endeavor as it is a money. They want it to be a moneymaker because clearly Netflix executives have an idea of what that is counterintuitive to what the creators of the show were saying. But I think that's a very complicated reality of like these things that are getting made. Like Netflix has done Full Metal. They did Cowboy Bebop. They did One Piece. They did Death Note. They've done this. They've done so many of these. And what are they doing? And I do think the answer is like trying to get people who will never watch an animated show to watch the thing on Netflix that just popped up on the screens. So
it's just disappointing, like especially because you know the original like series creators were like involved and then left because of creative differences. Like I can't imagine being in that room when they pitched some of the ideas and being the people who wrote the source material and not, you know, not agreeing, and the Netflix being like, okay, bye, like we'll make it without you.
Hollywood in general is like super risk averse. That's why IP stuff is so IP driven. So having something that was successful and then making it into live action, they are obviously not trying to make something bad. They're not, nobody, even if you are if you run Netflix to the most like dollar to dollar, the best business is to make something that's good. There's just obviously then limitations. Nobody's trying to make something bad, but they might make it, they might agree that lesser or like making a decision that might mean it's less love. But even that's not true. Anyway, it's very complicated.
Yeah, it is. Should we get into the superlatives?
Let's do it.
So talk about your favorite scene. You had mentioned you had one in mind.
Okay, the scene where Katara's mom dies is exactly the type of dark stuff I love. So she claims that she's the waterbender and then goes to pretend to bend water and then she dies is so good. It's like, it's exactly, well,
it
perfect.
Hurts. It hurts so bad.
Perfect D&D backstory stuff. Mm-hmm. But the other one I do love, and you know what? I will culminate it, and it's not just the moment that Zuko like won't fight his father, or won't like finish his father. Mm-hmm. I'll actually say that the best scene of that is when, I think it's either, he might be Young Lee, but I think he's one of the guys on the ship who you don't understand that actually like Zuko is the most compassionate of any of us, and they hate this little young brat. And then it's revealed that they were the 41st Division. I do absolutely love the scene. And this is where I think like the foundation of the show is so good that makes me want to watch the animated series, but where the writing is clunky. So the scene happens where, all because Zuko's like, no, don't sacrifice the 41st Division, and calls the plan bad. So his dad makes him fight him. Then they fight. And then he loses and he burns like Zuko's eye. And then the dad in the recovery, when like Zuko's recovering, he's like, you know, you have to go find the Avatar and you can't come back until you find them. And if you like the 41st Division so much, why don't you take them? And then Captain Lee or whatever is there and he goes, but we're the 41st Division. Yeah, dude. Like, yeah, obviously from the story we got told. Obviously you're the 41st Division, dude. Like, obviously. And why would you say it like, they needed a way to reveal that like the crew was the, but I feel like they did it, but they were like, well, what if people don't really get it? So what if we have him say, like, but you could have had Iroh be like, see, and then he took you, the 41st Division thing. But instead they did it in the silliest way. Like, but we're the 41st Division.
Yeah.
Is the silliest. Specific scene I do love because I think it's like, you have complicated characters. You have like, it's all good. It's all great stuff. Mm-hmm. So I really liked that.
Yeah. Funnily enough, that was the one addition to the live action series that I was like, I really like that addition.
Oh,
actually.
That's new.
Yes. And that there wasn't like a 41st division that like Zuko, to my knowledge, at least, correct me if I'm wrong, feel free. But I believe that I don't think there was like a 41st division. There is a scene where like Iroh sits down and talks with all of them and like tries to get through Zuko's perspective. And yes, he does say that like a battle plan is stupid, but it's not because of the like, you're sacrificing all of these men for nothing. I don't believe that was from the anime series.
Yeah,
but I liked it. I did like that addition because it does like give you a little bit more of like a view on who Zuko is. Because he's a little bit of a bratty teenager, you know, for the most part in season one. Yeah. For my favorite scene, I mean, in terms of the visual grandness, I loved the final fight. I just thought it was like so cool looking. Yeah. Like that was incredible. I just liked watching the bending. Like that's what we're here for, you know? Like if I'm going to see a fight scene, I want to see like fire and ice going at it. So I really, really liked that. And then in terms of like, I don't know, emotional. Also, it was like Appa looked incredible. I love a flying little sky bison and Appa looked really good. So credit to them for doing such a great job.
I've written that character in a Survivor season in the Discord. If you're interested, sign up. Well, you can go back and read all the seasons. I've definitely watched scenes. Is he that big in the
He's huge.
Humongous.
Yeah. They have a big saddle on him and you could fit like 10 people up there.
Amazing. Yeah. It's so amazing.
He's great.
Yeah.
All right. Favorite character. Grace, do you have a favorite character? It's such a loaded question.
I think the Zuko stuff is the best. I do think that I actually really like Aang, but I think the story of him like and there's a really great another great scene I would say is when Aang decides to go into the Avatar state because he says I'm not from here and I was never supposed to be here. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really good too. I really like, we ever talked about Boomy? I love the idea of Boomy. I know some people have said that they like ruined him from the show.
We'll talk about Boomy because he's in one of my superlatives.
Okay. But I still liked it. Mm-hmm. And I think I'll still go with Zuko. Yeah.
I have to give a shout out to Suki. I just thought like they did such a good job with her and I was immediately taken with her. Like I know she's not one of like the main characters, but I felt like they did such a good job with her that I wanted to shout her out as like my favorite, beyond Uncle Iroh, who's just like, this is adorable. I just love him. Let's get into worst character because, hey, Boomy, looking at you, buddy. This is not the Boomy that I know and love. This Boomy is mean, like very mean in a way that the Boomy in the animated series isn't. Like, yes, he pushes Aang, but he's not like vindictive and like nasty. And I just thought the vibes were not there with this Boomy. I was not a big fan. Akarsh. I'm so sorry. I don't know how to pronounce his name, but he's from Ghosts, the actor mm-hmm. who plays Boomy. Totally unrecognizable. Never would have guessed that was him underneath all that prosthetic makeup and stuff. But I don't know. It just didn't work for me. It didn't work for me. Boomy, this is not my Boomy.
Fair. I think the thing I liked about him being so antagonistic is it feeds into the thing of Aang. There's so much of the themes about like the stuff that like Katara is trying to convince Aang of, that Aang has to do it himself. The thing that Aang is then saying to Zuko of like, you've been hurt so much. I feel like it feeds really well into the themes of the show that Aang would return back to find somebody he grew up with who has become such a different person than he might have if like Aang was around and had grown up with him. So I did like the way he was like actually like kind of like a boss he had to defeat early on.
Yeah. I just feel like he's wackier, like, and he's more of like, in my opinion, like a Mad Hatter sort of character. And I just didn't feel that as much, but who do you?
It's funny though. Again, I feel like he was very Mad Hatter. He was just evil.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Who, worst character? I don't know. This is kind of tough. I don't know that anybody from like the main cast, I'm like thinking, I don't know if I have a worst character. I feel like I don't have one. I don't know.
I mean, Zhao sucks.
Like, yeah, I mean,
he's not a bad character, but he just
like Ozai is clearly the worst character.
Yeah,
like,
but Daniel Day Kim though.
Yeah, but he's not like the worst character, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there's people who like showed up who I like didn't really, you know. It's like I didn't, you know, Princess Yu, and I'm like I'm so in on Suki and then at that point, so I'm like, yeah, what are you doing? Get out of here.
Sokka duo. Yeah,
then I'm get out of here, man. Yeah.
Now for a question that I teased at the end of the last podcast, Grace, if you had to pick a type of bending, which type of bending would you pick?
Well, here is the thing. At at the summer camp that I grew up with, we have a thing. It's called Concordia Day, which means Harmony of the Earth Day. And you get put into one of four teams. You get put into earth, water, air, or fire. We actually give them the Latin names, I believe. So you're like aqua or whatever. The aqua is my jam. My favorite color is blue.
Waterbender.
There's also the tradition. So every team goes to get their shield at the beginning of the day. And so you lead your team out and to go get it. The water aqua team would always get to do the coolest one. We got to go into a canoe to get our shield from the middle of the lake. So it's obviously the cool where everyone else just has to walk on stupid land to go get theirs. So I'm clear. I'm aqua all day. Okay. I'd be on the water tribe. Yeah.
All right. Awesome. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I've always picked fire. Fire is chaotic and can be good. Yeah. It can be bad. But I, for better or for worse, I love it. It's fire.
So, what sign is a Leo? What is a Leo sign?
Leo is a fire sign.
What's a Virgo sign?
Virgo's an earth sign.
Yeah, I thought maybe I would also get earth. But
listen, and each one, I won't spoil anything because I think it's more fun if you discover it, if you do watch the series. But like each element also has like a side bending, right? So like, okay, water, you can also bend ice. You know what I mean? Like, so each one also has other components, which is one of the reasons people were so pissed that Aang pretty much flew like immediately. And it's like, that's not okay. He's not supposed to do that. Wow. But he flew. We all saw it. Don't try to lie to me and be like, he was bending air. He flew. Yeah. I saw him fly. Uh-huh. But no, I would pick fire. Fire is very cool. I like fire. I don't know what else to say besides. And I know they're like the Slytherins, right? Like it's. But you could be a good firebender. Zuko's just a bad one, you know? And the king, he's just a bad one. They're not all that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Not all firebenders.
Hashtag not all firebenders.
What about your superlative, the general superlative that you have for this show, Grace?
Oh, I got to go find a big appa. I got to find it. Most likely to make me want to go until I find an appa that I can ride around in forever.
Yeah.
Actually, I would like a Momo, okay, too.
I don't know that I would want a Momo. He seems kind of annoying. I'm not
gonna. I want a Momo.
Yeah. Gosh, what would you know what? Show that really makes me want to like dress up in costume. Just like occasionally. Like the costumes were so cool. And the hair. I love the hair on this show. They really nailed it, in my opinion, with like staying true to the way the characters look on the animated series. They did a really, really good job with that. But yeah, it makes me want to dress up in costume a little bit and just pretend to bend.
Doesn't Sokka have more side? He's more shaved on the side, isn't he? Isn't he more like top bun back? Isn't he?
Yeah. It's kind of, it's Sokka, like a little top bun thing. Sokka. Yeah. A little top bun thing. You said Sokka or was it someone else?
No, that's what I was saying. But then I was worried that I would mispronounce his name. So this is, that's the Sokka. And then Ahsoka is from Star Wars.
Yeah, Sokka is from Avatar. Ahsoka,
I know the joke doesn't work if I mispronounce it.
Sorry. And then we have our theme song ranking. And gosh, I have feelings about this.
Well, they didn't really do anything.
They didn't do anything, and it's not as good as the animated one. Do you know what the animated one is, Grace? And I don't know if you know this, just living in the world that we're in. When Katara's, I believe it's her grandmother, I'm so sorry if it's not, when she is explaining all of the Avatar stuff in like episode one, she literally says the intro. Like she reads a script of the intro. And I was like, why didn't you just do it then? Why didn't you just do the intro properly?
See, the thing is that like last week we kind of had the same thing where they didn't really have an intro, but I thought the visuals were so good that I put it in fine. But this one feels like it either has to be, I mean, I'm tempted to just put it in trash, but maybe it's just
I would love to put it in trash because also the visuals aren't good either. Like it's very serious and it's like almost illegible. I don't like the font. I really don't. Okay. It's not for me.
Trash.
Let's put it in trash. I'll put it above
It's better than Griselda. Griselda was like literally the word Griselda on the
screen. Yeah. All right, fine. We'll put it above that.
Yeah.
I mean, again, like it's, you know, I don't want to come down too hard on it. It's like it, I was happy to like watch a lot of it and I really liked the bending and everything. It just like some of the changes they made weren't for me and like, you know. It's fine. It's fine. I do think they're like, I'm happy to hear though that Grace, that you enjoyed it as someone who hasn't seen the animated series. Because I was very curious to know if it would hit home with you knowing that like for me, it missed the essence of like what I love so much about the animated series.
I like loved it. So yeah, that was really good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, should we talk about what we're doing next week, Grace?
Let's do it.
All right. So there's this show called Expats on Prime with Nicole Kidman. I feel like she's popping off. Like she always pops off, but she's popping off like in the past couple of years, Grace.
Yeah, well, she's in those movie theater trailers, so
the AMC ones.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to check this show out. I think it's been coming out weekly, right? So I think the whole thing is already out.
Yeah, 6 episodes. It is on Amazon Prime and it's about basically like, you know, it's set in Hong Kong.
It's Margaret, based on a novel too, right?
Yes, a 2016 novel. Nicole plays Margaret, and then it's about her son going missing, I believe. She's like an expat.
Yeah, 6 episodes, about an hour a piece, I think. So not too much of an underhaul for this next week. So if anybody wants to check that out, you can listen to us talk about it next week. As we said before, if you want to subscribe, pusherrecaps.com/full-spoiler-recaps. Grace, anything else you have going on you want to tell the people about?
Yeah, so Aaron and I will be getting together this week. There's a lot of different things that we could have talked about. Then we realized like Dune comes out this Thursday. Maybe we should just cover Dune as soon as it comes out. I have seen Dune 2, Dune Part 2. I thought it was amazing. I might go see it again on opening night is how good it was. So look out for something from us this week. We'll be covering Dune at some point, obviously, whether or not it's later this week or early next week. And then I think I stressed out everybody in the Discord by announcing this new show called Best of TV Since 2014. So Mike Bloom and I, each week, we will be unveiling a list as voted on by the listeners of Post Show Recaps. We are doing best episodes since 2014, best movies since 2014, best TV characters since 2014, and of course, the best television show since 2014, which has the interesting caveat that Josh Wigler introduced, which says that the show cannot have started before 2014, so the entirety of the show has to have started after. I guess it could not be finished, like Severance obviously counts. So
right.
Yeah, so make sure you go and vote, look for the trailer, all the polls are in there, or we sent, if you're a patron, we sent it there. And if you are in the Discord, it's in the announcements thread. But yeah, people are very stressed, and then I told everyone the other day that episodes is coming first. They're like, but that's the hardest one. I said sorry, makes sense thematically.
I have my TV series list, I think, done. It's so hard. 10? Just 10. It's very hard. I haven't done TV episodes, but like, I mean, really, I'm going to have so many Succession episodes. It's not even going to be funny. So I just found out
if you're looking for help today on this, IMDb has a really, really great episode filter thing that you can do, where you can sort by the rating of the show, but you can filter it. Like, it had to have been after January 1st, 2014. It has to be in a genre you like. It has to have a certain number of ratings. So you're not just going to get like a thing that has like 4 or 5 stars, like 10 out of 10 ratings. A pretty helpful tool, I think, if people are looking to do their episode ratings.
Yeah.
But I think it'll be a tricky one. Yeah.
So go fill that out. In the meantime, we're here covering a new show every week. It's a grand old time. You can also hear me on Shoot 90 Show Stop Me talking about Buffy and Felicity. We're jacked in on Buffy. You know what I mean? If you watch Buffy, it's wild times. So go check out all of that. We'll be back next week. And until then, you've been fully spoiled.
You've been fully recapped.